I would just say there's one misperception of our veterans, and that is they are somehow damaged goods. Although if we tell our veterans enough that this is what's wrong with them, then they actually start believing it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Dead Reckoning Radio. On this episode, I got the opportunity to talk to William Bolyard, the author of Sober Man's Thoughts. We talked about what influenced him to write the book, how the book came about, the responsibility of actually writing and getting the book out there, and the relief he has felt since finishing it. More than anything, he just wanted to pass on the lessons he learned while writing the book, living life adventurously, and struggling with all that life offers. I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did.
Hey, so how old did you just turn? I know you just had your birthday like a couple days ago.
I just turned 30, so I'm finally here now. And I finally hit the big 3-0, and we're having our last. I want to make sure of that. And that happens in the next month. So more than anything, the past month, not only like dealing with stuff here, stuff at work, but or stuff like when I say here, like with Dead Reckoning, like at home, my wife's super pregnant, and then we have three crazy kids running around, and I'm trying to get the house all together. And like today, I was
juggling like two fucking other jobs you have.
yeah. So I'm pretty exhausted. So on my birthday, like my wife was like, "What do you want to do? What do you want to do?" And I'm like, "I don't want to do shit. Like that's just what I don't want to do anything." So I got off shift the day before. Came home, we went to my favorite breakfast spot with the family. We went to a bookstore up in my favorite bookstore, and then came back. My boys wanted to watch a movie, and I just like laid on the couch, and they literally just sat on me as I slept for an hour and a half, and I woke up like perfectly rested, and I was like, that's how I wanted to spend my birthday. That was sweet. Just to take a nap.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Do you ever think you'd be where you are now at 30?
Oh man, I can go down a rabbit hole with that.
That's a good podcast question.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about to say, I guess we're already kind of getting into it. So, no, I don't know. It's really weird because I intentionally wanted to be a medic. There's a couple routes I wanted to go in the army, but I never even thought I was ever going to join the military. So I guess that question like could be asked, like, did you ever think this like when you were a kid, like within the past 5 years, like there's a lot that can kind of go into that question, but there's one part of me that's like, I haven't done enough yet, which is hard to say because I know I've done a lot. But then there's also that other part of me. It's like, this life's pretty good and I'm headed in the right direction. So let's just keep going. And I don't know how I've made it this far and have done this well. And so it's encouraging, but it's also motivating. Like, let's keep going.
Yeah, man, that's amazing. I love seeing guys like you that like did the full thing too, like got out and like they're just living like these awesome, successful lives. Like, I mean, it's always very common, like guys always want to bring up like the tragedy stories, but like, man, I feel like we need to like talk more about like success stories, like make it more of the norm of just guys getting out, crushing life, living the American dream, because that's what all Americans deserve. I feel like if you do any form of public service, you should have a little bit better of a life. I feel like you kind of earned it.
Well, that's, yeah, like we were saying earlier, it's like you could, it's hard to look at life that way when you've experienced what we've experienced, us talking before. I know a little bit about your past, you know a little bit of mine, and so it's hard to look at it that way, and it's hard to stay motivated and optimistic. But when the other option is to spiral, and you have towed that line before, and you know where that road eventually goes, to me, the easy route is the optimistic route, the hardworking route, the successful route. And so, I don't know. To me, there is no other option other than to just give it my all, stay positive, and just literally try to like look at the bright side any chance I can, and every day just live it to the fullest, work as hard as I can, play as hard as I can, be in the moment as much as I can, because we also just know how fragile life is and how easy it is to take advantage of if you don't actually take advantage of life, you know?
Yeah. I feel like it does make you a lot more optimistic. Like I always try to always say like the glass half full mentality.
Oh, yeah.
it's definitely one of those things where you look back and you think of like all the bad things that like gone on in the past, and like you look at where you are now, and like, I never thought I'd be where I am today. Especially like, man, if I was 16 years old, like 18 year old would have kicked my ass. And like looking back, like 18 year old me, 21 year old would have kicked my ass. And like looking back at 21 year old me, I'd kick his ass too, because like there's so many different phases of my life where I was such a shithead. And I'm like, bro, like, I know it sucks, but like, it's going to get so much better. You just have to like, stop being so self-destructive.
Yeah. And that's what's crazy is like, in the moment, you typically know when you're acting a fool, and
yeah.
And yet you still are like, man, screw it. I'm just going to do that. And I'll just live with the consequences later.
What's
I always
going to happen, right?
Well, that you say that. And man, I think I don't know if I quoted it on here or not, but I say it at work all the time. And it's from How I Met Your Mother. I
love that show.
I haven't watched it in a while, but it is a damn good show. I've watched the whole thing with my wife. And Mosby, was it Tim? Tom? I think it's Tim.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that's future Tim's problem. And I always just think of that. Like, when I have a lot going on, I'm just like, no, that's future Tyler's problem. Like, I can't worry about all of that right now. I just have to worry about this one thing that's in front of me at this moment. And man, I feel bad for Tyler in the future, but
yeah,
he'll get to that eventually.
He'll figure it out. Yeah.
He usually does.
I know him pretty well.
Yeah. He usually figures it out, but that's not anything that I need to concern myself with right now. Or I'm like, well, I think I'm just going to put him in a hard situation.
And, he'll make him better.
Yeah, he'll be better for this.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, but we'll get right into it. I will say I think we've already started. So, people have been buying the book. People have read it. I'm sure you've been getting messages. I know we have. And this enigma of William Boyard came out of nowhere. So, let the people know who you are.
Well, I'm William Boyard. I am a very new writer to this whole stuff. I've been writing for a long time. This is my first time ever really putting anything out there. I wrote the book over the span of like 3 years of just being extremely self-destructive, just boozing my way across the world because I thought it'd fix me, and it didn't. I was in the army for 8 years, served as an infantryman, deployed once to Afghanistan, and that's really about it. I don't really like to bring up all that stuff because it doesn't really matter, I think, in writing. I feel like, especially like the stuff I write about, I feel like if you base your whole identity off of, you know, your whole writing identity off like a past life service, then you're just like writing yourself into a box. So I try to make it not about that, but there are like some poems in there that I'm sure most of you have read now. I mean, the book's been out for like 3 months now, so anyone who's listening to it. But yeah, from originally West Virginia, Appalachian Mountains, and this is me. So yeah.
Well, yeah, the book came out and we had to kind of push the release date multiple times and then squeeze it in when we kind of could, because you do have a busy schedule and you are overall, you're just busy and you kind of disappeared, and we were all about putting it out there. And I think one of the biggest appeals is kind of what you alluded to right there, but then just talking about yourself is the book being titled Sober Man's Thoughts. I think maybe in the back when it talks about you, it simply just says that you served in the army, but there's no military insignias or crest or allusions on the front cover, seeing your name or even on the back cover. It doesn't. None of it talks about it. And I think that was my first, like, okay, this is something that I'm interested in just off of the pitch and the title. And then once you dive into it, you do talk about war, but just almost as like this abstractness, not necessarily M4s or explosions or IEDs or actually like looking at death in the face necessarily, but when you do, it's not just with war or combat, it's within just life in itself and the adventure.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's why originally, like, any dude enlists for that reason, like, they want that adventure, especially guys like going like medics, infantrymen, like, Cav Scouts, like, they want that adventure. They want that. Because that's what we've read about. I mean, I remember reading the Red Badge of Courage when I was, like, in the sixth grade. And I saw it, and I always heard about the book. I was like, yeah, hey, I'll check it out. And then, like, right after that, I went from Red Badge of Courage to Fallen Angels by Walter D. Meyer. And it was, like, two, like, complete polar opposites of, like, warfare. And I was, like, this punk rock kid. Like, I played the drums. Like, I was in this, like, shitty garage band. And I was like, man, military sounds like a really big adventure. And like, that's kind of how I got my introduction to like military literature, was those two books. And like now, like that I write and stuff, I always feel like less is more when you're talking about that stuff. Because I do try to make it obscure. I try to make it so anyone can look at it and understand and like feel something from it. I'm not trying to make it like too much about me. I feel like when you're, especially when you're writing like a poetry book, like it's not about it. It's about you in some aspect, but it's for the, everything you write is for the reader. So you have to write it in their mindset and get that to something where like, hey, some dude's like on his last buck, he picks up the book, he starts reading through it. And he's like, yeah, someone else understands that. Like, maybe I'm not the only one that feels this way. And that's kind of the idea I wrote behind this book. So.
Well, yeah, it definitely comes through. You could, like I said, you and I have talked about it personally. What brought you to actually write this book? Do you want to go into that at all?
Yeah, I mean, why not? So, yeah, so I originally, I was a young PFC. I was 20 years old, and I was in a committed relationship with this girl. We'd dated through high school, and she ended up committing suicide. And that kind of, that's a lot to handle as a 20-year-old. So after that, it took me a long time to kind of get back on my feet. I guess the military kind of helps that. But after that, I was just kind of like full focused on like getting every bit. I'd made the military my life, but like it was like destroying me at the same time. I'd spend every leave I could, like abroad, and I was just drinking all the time. I even lived above a bar at one point in my time. And yeah. And like eventually along the way, I started, I've always been a big reader, and I found like Leo Jenkins, like on a podcast, and I listened to his, like talk about his book. I think it was Lest We Forget. And he just put out another book, like, I think it was On Assimilation. And then I read that. And I was like, okay. And then he put out First Train to Denver, and I was like, okay. And I'd been writing stuff at that point. And I just started writing poetry. And then after that, it just kind of kept coming out. And I noticed that the more I wrote, the better I felt about things. And I felt it was a great way to process. You know, over the course of like 3 or 4 years, I finally like had like this big stack of poems that I didn't know what to do with. And I was like, I'm probably not the only one that feels this way. So I might as well try to do something with it productive instead of just drinking alone in my apartment above a bar.
Yeah. Oh, and I imagine, like I said, we've gotten messages just through us. You aren't the only one that's felt this way. And I'm sure the reception that you've gotten kind of proves that. So, like, that's been the best part about writing for anybody so far, is not only does it help you sort through your emotions, your ideas, your experiences, that relatability where you don't feel so alone, that isolation. This community is being built through people who are willing to put themselves out there, willing to be vulnerable, and willing to talk about something so taboo, in a sense, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's say, obviously, drinking and military go hand in hand, but you kind of stretch it to as far as it can go. So what's been some of the reception that you've gotten?
It's been a lot. So, I mean, I've gotten, the weird messages and stuff like that. I've gotten like the normal mess. I haven't actually gotten like a whole lot. Like most of the dudes I get, it's mostly like, it's like 90% guys, and they're talking to me, and it's like military service dudes, and they're talking to me, and they're like, hey man, like, listen, like this part, like I felt that exact same thing when I'm in my barracks room, and like I went through this or that, and like, I know what it feels like. And like, there's every now there's that one gem where it's like when someone talks to me and I know like this is the exact reason I fucking wrote this book. And I've only got it twice so far. And guy hit me up. He's like, hey, I was going through some hard times and I read his poem, your book, and your, the way you described it, I could see myself saying those same words in a different aspect. And I really want you to know like how much I really needed that at that moment. And I realized that I need to probably like go talk to someone and like deal with my issues. And I was like, yeah, man, you probably do. Like not gonna lack of true code. I was like, and I talked to him about it. And like a big thing I tell all these people that talk to me, I was like, I did not handle my stuff the right way. Like anything you read in that book, it's the complete opposite of what you should do. Like I was messed up before I joined the Army. And then right at the beginning of my career, I had like extreme tragedy.
Yeah.
And then I went on and like my solution to solve my extreme tragedy was, oh, I'm just going to like, you know, chase deployments and, you know, drink a lot and, you know, get in bar fights and travel the world. And, you know, maybe I'll find happiness along the way. And, you know, I mean, like it says in the book, like I did every self-destructive habit to try to fill a void in my life.
Yeah. And so I think about him all the time because he's my favorite author. And you've said two things that kind of remind me of him, and it's Kurt Vonnegut. One that's more relevant to what you're saying right now, and it's in relation to Slaughterhouse-Five. And he talks about at the end of the first chapter, he reads the Gideon Bible. And anybody who knows anything about Kurt Vonnegut, he's a humanist, not Christian whatsoever.
Yeah.
He reads the Bible and he talks about Sodom and Gomorrah when Lot's wife looks back and she turns to a pillar of salt, and he relates it to himself of looking back at the bombings of Dresden and how Slaughterhouse-Five is written by a pillar of salt because it had to be. But from here on out, he can have fun. Is that kind of what you think Soberman's thoughts was for you? Is you knew that you had to process all of these experiences, all these things, and you didn't handle it well. And so now you've finally been able to just release everything, put it out there to the people, put this hopefully behind you. Have you been able to kind of start looking forward now?
Oh man, like it's been like a huge weight off my shoulders, like 100%. Like carrying this, like essentially I've just been carrying this book around me for like the past like couple years and like writing stuff down. And I will say, like, as soon as it like we finally got through it all and we started got through, and like I remember the day like to a T when I submitted the final final edits and everything. I went outside, I went out of the marsh down in Savannah, and I just like drank a beer and I was like, I'm finally fucking done with it all. And I felt so much better. And I finally reached like, it was like a moment of clarity. And like for this book, it needed to be written. And I'm so happy it's done. And like, I look back at that book and I read it. And it took me a long time to like actually be able to like read it, like front to cover. Like I remember when I first got the first copy, I read it from like front to cover and I was like, wow, that guy is fucked up. Like that guy's
yeah.
And it's hard to read for me because I look at that and I'm not that person. And like these poems are all essentially almost in chronological order. And you could kind of see the changes in my life throughout the poems. If like you really like look into it, like you'll see me like from the times where I'm living above a bar and like the only thing I want to do is just spend the night with some random woman that I meet at some shitty bar I go to. And then you'll see the parts where like I'm starting to get ready and I deploy and I go to that. And then like you see the parts where like I'm moving down to Savannah and I'm living in Savannah and like doing the same old things all over again. Like there's all, and like you see the parts of the book where I'm like traveling, I'm backpacking through Europe and I'm out in the desert and I'm experiencing all these other different things. Like to look back at those times in my life, it's pretty difficult, and especially like to talk to people about it. Cause I'm like opening up like essentially the darkest parts of my whole life, to everybody.
Yeah.
But now it's over with and I've, writing completely different stuff. I'm finally able to write like what I really want to write, like travel and like adventure and like good times and stories. And like, I'm creating story. I've like completely stopped almost writing poetry, which is weird. And I feel like a lot of people run into that issue.
Yeah. I think we've talked about it before. Like when you're in that mindset, like his poetry, and this is the other thing that reminded me of Vonnegut, is he taught, or I took a class about him, and one of the things that he's kind of known for is creating white space within the text. So not actually the white space between paragraphs and the margins and just short sentences or anything, like that's one thing. It helps the reader see less, and there's a whole psychological thing within that. I'm not going to nerd out on it, but the white space with between sentences and the reader filling in the blank. And so it's like the man walked into the house, he and his wife made eye contact, and now they look at outside the window on opposite sides of the house, something along like the lines of that. So there's a lot being said without actually being said, and in a way that's poetic, you know. Mm-hmm. And anytime you're writing poetry, at least for me, is I'm connecting 50 ideas within one poem, yet it may only be talking about how the sky's blue or something, you know. Yeah. but it also is relating to good times and trying to be optimistic during the bad times, and you're pulling from so many different sources. And so you are just like this hyper-vigilant state constantly, and like almost like a sensory overload. And as great as it is, at least for me, it is great to be done with it for a little while too. And whenever you're writing short stories or even fiction or even journaling, memoir, whatever you're writing, at least that you're kind of thinking a little bit more chronologically. You got to get plot, you got to start creating character development, story arc, setting, and so you're able to start kind of focusing in on these specifics, where poetry, like, it's all in one and all encompassing, at least for me it is. And so when I'm in that mindset, like, I can knock out poems like multiple in a day, and I'm like in the zone and it feels good, and I'm writing badass poems, it feels like. And then now that I've taken some time off, I try to write one and I'm like, man, how do you write a poem again? Like, what is that? Where does that thought even start?
It's weird. Like, you kind of lose it almost.
Mm-hmm. And then I've gone in cycles where I've felt like this before, and then I kind of get back into that rhythm again, and then it's just banging out poems. And so one of the things I always encourage people is, when you have any of this type of creativity, whether it's drawing or writing, or I don't play music, I wish I did, but it's like, you have to create, you have to create as much as you can when you have those creative juices flowing, because you're going to lose it at some point, and then you're going to hate yourself for not taking advantage of it. So it's good that you put all those poems on paper, and that it is behind you for the time being, but I imagine it'll pick back up. We all have that kind of poet's mind and heart and all that.
It's kind of like a small addiction, you know. And like, I'll honestly say, like, my favorite poem I've ever written was something I've written in the past like 2 months. And like, I have like about 300 like poems I have done nothing with and just sitting around. And I told myself, like, I'm like never going to publish another poetry book, because I was like, this is it. I'm done. I don't want to do this again. Cause like, poetry is madness. It's complete madness. And like, especially when like you're like trying to build a poetry book, and like, you have one poem about you spending a day at the beach, and you have another poem about you like, gun in your hand, you're like trying to not lose your mind in your shitty apartment, and it's like, where do I put these? And the editing process for poetry is like a nightmare, and you guys know that better than anyone. So
yeah, try to edit some poetry books or get feedback on them and reading them constantly. I love it and it's great to see people putting it all out there, but it becomes exhausting. I think April, we did the poetry month readings and everything, and that went incredibly well. One of them that I hosted was with Justin Egan, and he said the same thing about some of his books. He's like, it takes everything out of me to put out a book. And then he's like, and I think he said something along the lines that maybe he's gotten criticism, or maybe he himself feels like they feel rushed a little bit. He's like, but I have to. He's like, I can't dwell in those moments any longer.
He's probably the king of like getting poetry books out. Like, I talked to him like a little bit offline and stuff. And man, like, he is just able to knock out stuff like back to back to back. And it's not rushed. Like, it's not like a James Patterson novel where there's one every month and it's like some stereotypical bullshit.
Yeah.
But like, he's able to like pump out stuff and it's good. And I feel like he just has like a giant stack of like shoe boxes in his closet full of poems. He's like, all right, this is that book, this is that one, and he's just sending them out.
Well, he talks about it a little bit, and it's like, he says when he writes those poems, like, he gives himself a quota, and he's hitting it and he's disciplined. The dude's a hustler for sure.
He
gets after it, and they're good. But what he talked about as well, and it's something I think any other person who writes poetry could understand, is he's like, it takes every bit out of me. That he says by the end of me releasing it and hyping it up and stuff, he's like, I'm exhausted and I don't want to do anything for a while.
Yeah.
And then, but unfortunately, then that itch comes back. I'm like, well, I got more in me. Yeah. You know, like I was talking about earlier when my birthday just came. It's like, man, I'm proud of myself. I've done well. I can feel good, and now I can really enjoy the 30s and take advantage of actually having a steady income and some stability in my life and all that, and doing all that other stuff. And then another part of me is like, you bitch, you haven't done anything yet. You better keep going. Yeah, it's that balance.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to have that little bit in you too.
I think so.
And like, I'm really trying to hammer out like my short stories, because like that's like it's my main passion right now. Like, I'm like 3/4 of the way done with like the short story book I'm working on. But then I started writing poetry again, and I was at this casino in middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, and I randomly ran into Jason Isbell at the roulette table.
That's right. Yeah, you did tell me something about that.
Yeah.
How did that
go? And me and him and his wife like talked about poetry and stuff. And like, I went on, and like later that night, like I wrote like a phenomenal poem. And we were like sitting there like this guy's like, I wrote like a majority of my book, like listening to his music, like, and stuff. Like, he's probably one of like the greatest songwriters, like at this time of like country music, essentially. And I start writing an album, and I write another one, and then I write another one. And then before you know it, like, I have this more of a stack of poems. And I was like, man, you know, it'd be like a really good name for a fucking book. I'm like sitting there, and I'm like drinking at the bar, and I'm like glass half full, like more of like an optimistic side. Cause you have Superman's thoughts, and then you have the next one be like a glass half full, an optimistic side of the next step. And I'm like, God damn it. Here I fucking go. And I'm doing it all over again. I'm like, I just want to finish this short story book. And here I am already starting something else. And like,
oh, I can't even tell you how many projects I'm halfway, 3/4, a quarter of the way through right now.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I have like part of a novel. I have this like 3/4 of done the short story. And then I've essentially already started the next poetry book. And then I have like this other novel I want to work on that I started too. And I'm like, I'm like, writing is madness, and it's not very rewarding.
No. Well, so that's the thing. So like, throughout this, luckily made some pretty good friends in this community, because it is very lonely, and within my close friends group, no one really writes, and so like it is extremely lonely. But not through Dead Reckoning, luckily I've met some other people, and I actually talked to Leo yesterday, and he has multiple projects in a row. But now I've also I talked to David Rose quite a bit as well, and he is the king of being disciplined and focused and working on one thing at a time, seeing it all the way through to the end, and then moving on to the next. And I'm so envious of it. He goes offline. He goes offline, kind of unreachable for a little while, and he bears down, knocks out what he has, and then he finally has the attention and the bandwidth to be like, okay, hey, what other ideas do I have? And what were you wanting 2 months ago? It's like, man, I'm jealous of that, because my attention spans only last for so long. And yeah, I got projects in my house that are 80% done, and I'm like, oh man, I just gotta finish that one up. And then I'm like,
you're like really big on the woodworking and like carpentry stuff too, aren't you?
Yeah, that's so. I talked to Leo and David about it, and we're talking about having some type of Zen space. And Leo's surfing. I guess David's would be like riding his motorcycle, I think is what he said. And
yeah,
mine would be anything working with my hands. Like today, I literally weed eated and trimmed up all my hedges and did a bunch of mulch work. And I laid saw the other day. And it's like, I just really like manual labor.
It's good for the soul.
It does me well. And it's creating in a sense. You see the end state of something that you've worked on. I like laying floor. I've done a lot of floor in my house and my friends' houses and my parents' houses and in-laws' houses. And I don't charge them. I just do it because I just actually enjoy it. I'm like, if you pay for everything, I like building fences. I like woodworking. I like carpentry. I like just manual labor jobs that have that you, and I like trimming trees. it's just weird stuff. Like, that's my Zen moment though. It just,
you gotta have those little, you gotta have those, the outlets to your outlets. Cause I mean, like, I feel like us, like, writing is an outlet for us, but then
Like now, you said, it's kind of madness. It's madness. And
now it's kind of not become an outlet. It's like, now I'm kind of doing this for, like, trying to be good at it.
Well, yeah. And, Well, that's the thing though, is like, it's in Chuck Palahniuk's book, Consider This. He says every writer should have another creative outlet. And so, like, luckily I know how to draw decently well and do some graphic design stuff. So, like, that's another creative outlet that, like, when I'm not writing, but I feel creative, I'm like, okay, let me knock out Silverman's book cover. I knocked out another book cover not too long ago.
By the way, for people who listen to this, that was a fucking phenomenal book cover. And I sent him this, like, real shitty image, and he absolutely fucking crushed it. And, like, the most comments I get about it is like, what does the title mean? You're not sober. I'm like, thanks. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. And, like, then the cover's really cool. I'm like, that's what I like to hear.
Well, I appreciate it. Again, it's the creative juices. Like, I had something in my mind and I did it like 3 different times and I was like, I just don't feel like that's it. And then one day, I think me and you messaged back and forth like the entire night, and then it was done pretty much. And this last book cover I'll send you after this, it was almost the exact same process. I was texting images back to the back and forth with the author, and we finalized it, I'm pretty sure. But it's just like, that's like that creative outlet that, like, okay, well, I can't really write right now, but I have creativity. When I'm doing these like Zen projects, it's like working with my hands or having that other outlet, like, that's when I'm sorting through ideas and like really trying to process where I want to go within some of my stories, or at least what I've experienced myself and like exactly how I feel about it. And then it's like, okay, well, I have these 2 kind of 3 characters that I have in mind. How would this person react to that situation? How would that? And so, like, and when you're laying sod or mowing a lawn or trimming hedges or trimming trees or whatever, like, it doesn't require much thought. And so you're just kind of working through it. So I'm being productive for one. And then my kids like being around and stuff. So they're seeing what hard work does and pays off. And then I'm able to really sort through a lot of ideas. And so that's just like my Zen spot. But I recommend it.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have your Zen spot. I mean, mine's kind of like more of a, I do a lot of weird, like, I'm a big climber.
Yeah.
Like, I do a lot of like, I can't do a lot of like outdoor rock climb right now because, you know, I live in Savannah, it's by the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of stuff there. And the surfing's not too good, but like, I have like all these like crazy hobbies, like surfing, snowboarding
too, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Surfing, snowboarding, rock climbing. Like, I just started wakeboarding because my buddy was like, hey, you're good at snowboarding, you should be good at wakeboarding. I was like, okay. So I went and did that. And I was like, oh, I'm actually like kind of good at it. And then, so it's like, oh, great. Now I got to do this. And then, like, my other buddies are trying to get me into like start skydiving for fun. And I'm like, I don't know. My Zen is just trying to find something that's challenging and try to accomplish it, because it gets that little discipline in you, you know, that old military thing. You know?
Yeah.
It's like deep in us, no matter how hard we try to get rid of it.
And that competitive nature.
Mm hmm. And at the same time, it's like, I do all these other things, and in the back of my mind, I'm like, you need to get back to writing. But I just now got back to working back on my project that I really want to finish, is a short story one. Because I took like a whole month break of like not doing anything with like the book, and, you know, trying to make sure like people want to read the book, and talking to people about trying to buy the book, and talking about the book. Like, you kind of hate your own fucking book after a little bit, because you're like, man, I'm tired of talking about this. Like, I got so many better things I'm working on. Like, this is the first one. I got other stuff. Like, I want to talk about that. And they're like, no, I want to talk about this. I'm like, okay, I'll talk about that. And so now finally I started working on my other short story again. And that's going to be the good one. I got a good feeling, gut feeling about that one.
Oh, I've become a pretty big fan of the short stories, and now we just got to figure out how to get them out to the people, because, man, it's just like poetry. Like, I've said it before, is we found this niche thing that people like being poetry within the work veteran community, whatever. But the short story, it every word matters, so it's similar to poetry there, and your attention span, you can read it while you're taking a shit or something. So
yeah, like,
it could be as quick as a 5-minute read or a 20-minute read, yet you get something out of it rather than, like, I don't even know whenever I have like a thick book in front of me and it's a long ass chapter and I'm like, man, I only got like 15 minutes on, but I want to read. And then I'm like, I don't even know if I'm gonna be able to finish a chapter or two in this 15 minutes. And it's just like, well, let me see if I can get this section done at least, or subsection. And then it's like, well, now I stop mid chapter or whatever. But the short story, I feel like you can just, you get a lot more out of it in a shorter period of time. And that's what I've become a really big fan of since I am.
It's pretty challenging. Right
now. Yeah. Since I am busy now, they're fun to write. And then they're really fun to read. So I encourage you to keep doing them. And I encourage other people to check them out because they're awesome.
Oh, I'm grinding on them like hard. Like, I'm like very disciplined in the set. Like, I'm like, I have to keep it at 20 pages. So now I'm like trying to like
That's pretty long short story.
Yeah, I'm trying to like, so I feel like there's a step process to writing. It's like, I have this based on no factual reasons, just like my mindset on it. It's like you start writing poetry and then you work in a short stories and you work in novels. Like, that's the level. Like, I'm trying to like really work on this novel I'm trying to finish. Like, it's like a travel, like, novel thing, you know. It changes every day when I'm trying to make it. And then I have like other ideas for other novels. I'm like, that's a really good story, I'm gonna hold that one off, I'm working on that later. But I have like five really good short stories that I'm working on, and they're all about completely different things. You know, one's about like the Vietnam War, and like I tie a lot of like stuff, like direct correlation from the GWAT to the Vietnam War. And it's like, it's, you know, it's a romance type of thing, because like that's what I write about, you know. It's one of my things. And then like my next one, it's about like a dude like gambling his way through Central America, and the other one's about like a group of kids growing up boxing, and then like the, and like during the 2008 recession, like all their parents are getting divorced and like the economy's crashing, they're just like trying to figure it out. Which I thought, it's everything I write about has some basis of my own life, essentially. Oh, that's like you gotta write about what you know.
Mm-hmm. That's how most people, yeah, that's where most people are at, writing what they know and relating to their own life. Is there any influences that got you into short stories, or did you just see that as the natural progression?
I really don't know. I just kind of started doing it. And like, after I started writing like short stories, I started reading more short stories. Like, I was never like growing up reading, I never wanted to read a short story. Like, I was like, I want the full thing, nothing else. And like, then I start like writing stuff and I was like, oh, this would be a great chapter. And I would look back on it and I'd be like, it's actually kind of just like a small story. And I was like, oh, like a short story. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, full disclosure, I'm not like the most educated man in writing. I'm still trying to figure it all out. And
I am as well.
And I've just been like, I remember being very young, like riding on the school bus to my shitty fucking poor ass elementary school, and I would like create stories in my head to pass the time, you know, because it's like before cell phones and shit. So like, I just had nothing, and it was dark on the bus, so I couldn't read anything. And so I just sit there and I create my own stories, and like I did that for like years of my life. And then, like, now here I am writing, and I just like found a really good niche of it, and I really like creating stories. And I mean Ernest Hemingway is like probably one of the best things of like short stories. Like, Jack Kerouac actually has some really good like small short stories. I mean, though, I concluded like into his chapter of his book, but if you really like read it, like especially if you talk about like the Dharma bums, like some of his chapters in his book are essentially just a whole short story, like especially the first and second chapter. And like, it's also like the same thing with On the Road. Like, On the Road is essentially like a big collection of a whole bunch of short stories mashed into a novel, which is really interesting. And I feel like it's kind of a difficult thing to do. And I've watched a lot and I've read a lot like on that book and like its creation, and like, just phenomenal. Like, what a amazing, what a really interesting guy. But
no, I'll have to send you some after all this, because I've, like I said, I've been, and it may be influenced by actually trying to get formally educated on it all, and all my classes are condensed down that they make us read all these short stories. But
yeah,
I've become a huge fan of them, and I wasn't really aware of many of them growing up. But I think, and this is just maybe me being optimistic or me just hoping, but I really think that they're gonna take off, and they're gonna be something more relevant.
I've also kind of felt the same way because you guys essentially did start something. Like, I had never really, I mean, I found y'all in like y'all's very beginning days, and I was like, oh, like poetry, like Edgar Allan Poe. And
yeah,
I started to follow it more, and then like I got really hooked into it, and I was, and poetry just kind of came out. It's like the way I looked at it is like it's song lyrics without the music.
Yep.
I always wanted to be a great, if I could have been anything, I would have been a rock star.
Oh yeah.
But I was in a shitty band. And I wasn't that good of a drummer, so it wasn't going to happen. So,
yeah.
But, and then I see this, like, all these veterans, like, you guys have gotten so many people to start writing. And, like, I imagine you get so much stuff sent to y'all. Like, hey, can you check out my poetry? Hey, can you look at this? Like, hey, can you look at that? And like, in my own theory of it all, I'm not saying it's fact, but that's the natural progression of writing.
I think so.
Start with poetry and you're trying to fit a story into a couple lines and your poetry gets longer and longer and longer and longer. And then eventually you're going to start writing pages and those pages are going to turn to multiple pages. And then it's going to turn to chapters and the chapters are going to turn to a novel.
Yep.
That's just my opinion on it.
I think so as well. So we'll see.
What do you mean? Even Hemingway.
Yep.
Everybody likes to fucking talk about him. And like, he is like, he's the pinnacle man, you know, but I feel like, too many people are like more into him than it should be. Like he was a great.
I don't read a lot of his stuff.
No, neither do I. I have a couple of his first editions and like A Farewell to Arms.
I think that's the only
that book was a I've actually project.
I must say, I think that's the only one I've read from start to finish. Like I know I read Old Man in the Old Man in the Sea.
Old Man in the Sea, I thought sucked.
So I liked it, but it's very, very repetitive, and at some point, I'm like, okay, I get it. But
he drags on in a sense. I feel like with writing and the author, I feel like with half of it is like the book and the author are two different products.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And half of selling your book is who you are as an author, and
he's a man.
He's a fucking man. Like, that's badass. Like, I'll fucking follow that guy, even though he's a fucking ambulance driver, you know? but I actually had this poem that I thought it was way too controversial to publish. It was like, Hemingway's a pogue. Like, I was just like slamming.
That'd have been freaking awesome. That'd have been badass.
Like, essentially bashing the guy. And I was like, bro, if I publish this, like, no one's gonna fucking, everybody's gonna fucking crucify me. Like,
no, man, that'd have been awesome. I've been taking a stand.
Well, you know what? I'll dig it up. It's still in my little. It's in my shoebox of poems.
Yeah.
Good deal. Dig it up for book two because book two is gonna fucking happen. Sadly.
Yeah. I do like the glass half full. That's a good.
It's a good fucking name, right?
It's a good one, especially on Silverman's thoughts. It's a good one.
I hate it. I want to stop. I really do.
It's a curse, man. I think Leo says it in our War and Literature series. He says writers are people who want to, people who have to. You know. He's like, and I feel bad for the people who have to, you know. It's like, it's just something ingrained in us, and once you get down into it, you're not getting out. Or if you do, it's gonna eat at you because you got out, and then once you're in it, it's gonna eat at you because you're in, and it's just, it's never ending.
And the world romanticizes being a writer; they really do. Like you watch like movies and like books about like being a writer, and it looks really great. And then like you start doing it, and you're like, oh, it's kind of shitty. Like, there's no rich writer. There isn't. Like, I mean, there's a couple, but like.
Well, I also, it's funny now because like now that we're kind of in this world and part of it and stuff, and we talk to guys who want to be writers and talk to people who are actually writers, and we're becoming writers ourselves and everything. And like we have these, not the same conversations over and over, but like I've had multiple similar conversations, and it's just like I think what makes it so fascinating or what people love is everybody loves just telling you their ideas and telling you how smart they are or telling you how unique and how interesting and how creative they are. And it's like, and it's not necessarily anything boastful or arrogant or anything like that, but it's like people get passionate about their ideas or their opinions or their perspective or their stories or their experiences, and they just want to share it, and you're just like, I see that passion. I see that freaking fire, and people are just excited. And then you're exactly right. The story could be good, but if the person's freaking weird, you're just like, all right, well, best of luck to you. But if the person's
catch you later, bro.
Yeah, I'm about to say. And so it just kind of sucks because then if the person's freaking super cool and the story is decent, you're like, well, we can make the story a little bit better, but at least we have somebody that can sell the story, because that's also part of the world too, is it's business, and that adds on a whole extra layer. But the it's writing like thing, people, yeah, it's just like a hit. And it was David Rose who said it too, and I think, well, he said somebody else said it, and I can't remember who, but it's like every writer wanted to be a musician or wanted to be a rock star or something. And it's like, I got into poetry because I wrote raps back in high school. You know, I'd freestyle with my buddies at parties all the time. I
mean, a punk rock band, so yeah. Fucking bad.
Yeah. And I know Leo did. I know David Rose. I know Keith Dow. Like, I wanted to be a rapper at one point. You know, so it's like we all wanted to.
I feel like you still got it. You can probably still do it. I believe.
No, I have no flow. I have no flow. I got the rhymes and I got the lines, but I do not have the flow. So, and I do not want to be a rapper anymore. So I like
it. Poetry. Well, now the world's opening back up. Maybe when we could all get together and do another like versus curses thing, maybe we get a freestyle session out of you. Yeah.
You gotta get some alcohol on me.
Well, don't worry. Where I go, there it will follow.
I know. We do need to get something together. Well, yeah, we got the world.
We really do. The world.
I was just on the phone with Leo, and I know. We got some stuff in the works. We'll make something happen.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. Well, we do need to actually start wrapping it up and everything.
Yeah, is there anything, it's been a while now.
Yeah, is there anything that you want to say to the people before we let you go?
I'll say, I really got no words of wisdom. If you're looking at me for words of wisdom, you probably come up with the wrong tree. But if you're looking at a great way to not do things, I'm your guy. And I'll tell you this, if you have any passion of writing and you want to write, don't talk about it, just do it. Just write down what you feel, and that it'll all kind of fall into place. And always tip your bartenders.
That's good stuff. Where can they find you?
Shit. So my social media is Jess Buck. I'm everybody's favorite Uncle Buck. So Wayne Boyard, I'm pretty much only on that. And I'm not on that a lot. So you can find my book on Dead Reckoning. It's on Amazon, but don't buy it there. I do have the link in the profile for my Instagram. But if you buy the book for Dead Reckoning, just go leave a great review on Amazon. And maybe some idiot somewhere will buy it. And that's about it for me.
Good deal, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. I appreciate being here.
The biggest, I think the biggest misperception is that somehow we're damning you. But nothing really can stop us.